Welcome back, guys. It's me, Mario, the Artisan Rogue. In this podcast, we'll be talking about a kind of bizarre little theme. It's the concept of dreams. Now, I tend to give a lot of credit to the dreams and or nightmares that I've had over the years that end up giving me quite a bit of inspiration in the stories I want to tell almost directly in a lot of circumstances. But one of the things I wanted to kind of touch on today was how do dreams affect what we do in everyday life in other ways? And the reason I'm bringing this up and the reason I'm talking about this is because I believe that, you know, dreams can be, you know, there's a lot of explanations out there and a lot of research has been done into that sort of thing. And I'm not familiar with the vast majority of it. But what I do know is this much. I believe that, you know, depending on, you know, from anything from what you eat to what you've just watched on television to maybe what you're going through either at your job or in your personal life can certainly affect the sort of things that are going to manifest whenever you're in that, you know, REM state or, you know, whenever you're in the deepest sleep and you're really in that dreamland. And I've always found it kind of bizarre that, you know, especially for the dreams that I have, they seem to be sort of really disconnected, discombobulated sort of bits of imagery. Sometimes they'll evoke moments for that were from my childhood. And to fill in a little hole there, I touched upon it a little bit in a post that I had done on my website. When I was a kid, you know, my father was military, so we moved everywhere and all that sort of thing. So I was kind of used to the idea of consistently ending up in different homes, different houses. And, you know, whether it was in the South, whether it was overseas or whatever, you end up wondering, at least I did as a child, like, well, who lived here prior to me? You know, and what memories and what moments exist in this home? And sometimes I believe that I ended up manifesting a lot of that in my head as little storylines or maybe imagination plots. You know, and I don't necessarily mean like things whenever I was sitting around playing with my toys or anything else like that. But what I mean is that, okay, well, you know, to be quite frank, a lot of times especially whenever we first moved to the house in Aviano, Italy, I recall that the house was very old. It had a lot of, you know, rooms. It had marble flooring. It was just a very old, old, old home. I'm talking a couple hundred years old. And it had some newer additions to it. It had some things like that. But it was backed up to a very wide field at the base of the mountains. And there was a small area that was nothing but trees and then a farmer's field over to the side. And I recall, you know, as a child that, you know, my parents really didn't let us get off of the fenced-in area very much. I mean, for our own safety. I mean, I think, you know, what parent would really let anybody do that, you know, when you're in a foreign country, that kind of thing. You know, we were military, we were Americans. But, you know, I was in first grade at that time. And we were there from when I was in first grade to third grade. Now, the reason I'm telling you that is because, you know, those are the moments that I've seen, like, in younger children whenever it seems like that level of imagination is at its full tilt run. And there were plenty of things that, now that I look back on them, you know, time has either lessened or dulled some of my memories, but thank goodness for things like photographs and my parents remembering things much more clear and concise than I can. But I can think about a lot of those moments, and sometimes when I go back and look at photography or I listen to my parents tell stories, or, you know, oral stories or oral storytelling in general, and my family is a very rich and varied tradition. One of the things I really love is that my mother and father, often around the dinner table, will tell these old stories. And I think, you know, probably quite a few know what I'm talking about. And it's not just reminiscing. It's what's keeping a lot of our older, you know, relatives that have gone on alive in a lot of ways. Well, all of that, coming full circle back, trying not to digress on this, is what I mean with dreams. There have been moments whenever I've had dreams about, you know, places I've lived and long past people, whether they had, you know, died or whether they just moved on in life, that come back and they end up reformulating into new ideas or new perspectives or new concepts that I end up wanting to either illustrate or turn into stories. In fact, that's a lot of what the genesis for my current main comic, Pagan Zoetrope, was about. You know, for those of you that are just listening to this podcast now or don't know anything about my comic, it's a book that's based on the semi-fictional town of Warrensville, which is, yes, based on my old hometown, Warrensburg, Missouri. And it follows some of the adventures I'd gone through and some of the things that I'd known other people to go through, but told through completely different characters and amalgamations of people. Number one, because I thought I was a little more creative and fun and I could be a little more loose. Number two, I didn't want to get sued. So because of that, I've often relied on a lot of things. And one of the things that I've done is that when I do tend to have dreams, I actually keep, and this is going to sound probably a little bit weird, but I do keep kind of a dream journal. And that sounds bizarre because you think that if a dream happens, you know, if they're really either horrific or they're scary or maybe they're really bittersweet, they do tend to stay with you. But there is something about waking up and being able to grab a book and or even, and I've recorded even on my phone if I've forgotten my small notebook, and I will quickly recount what I went through. And I mean, some of them don't even make sense. Here's a really good example, and I don't even know where this is going to end up making it into any kind of future storyline or not. But there's a place in Warrensburg called Those Were the Days. It's a little secondhand kind of place where it's like three or four stories tall. It's downtown on Pine Street. If any of you guys are from Warrensburg, you know exactly where this damn thing is. And it is, it literally is a maelstrom of a flea market. Well, the thing is, in my dream, and this is just one that I can, because I was a huge fan of Jimi Hendrix, which is one reason why I think he was in this dream, I had a dream where essentially I went there and I was trying to trade in my guitar and my amplifier, and for some reason, it was in the late 60s or early 70s, you know, just there was this, you know, almost ultraviolet kind of colorization, like the color palette of my dream was really bright, really crazy, and I remember walking up the stairs, this one particular stairwell that is, I don't even, for the amount of old people that work at Those Were the Days, you'd think that they'd have an elevator or an escalator or something else like that, but no, they have, and any of you have been out there, understand what I'm talking about. It's this stairwell of carpeted death that, you know, they're going up isn't so bad. Coming down, there's been plenty of times that I've wondered how I've not slipped and broken my neck on that damn main stairwell. At any rate, in my dream, I ended up going up and talking to, you know, Jimi Hendrix, and I'm kind of, you know, blown back because, you know, it's him. He's really there, and he's almost in his stage persona sort of thing. But he's talking to a guy, and I cannot remember this guy's name for life. I went to high school with him, and he was really big into country music and that sort of thing. He may have been a Jimi Hendrix fan. I don't know. But I recall that in my dream, he's standing there talking to him about, like, taxes, like IRS taxes. But I'm trying to go up to him and tell him, hey, man, really want to trade in my amplifier, really want to get another type of guitar. This rig isn't working for me, that sort of thing. And he's like, hold on, man. I ain't got time for that. I got to do my taxes. And it was the weirdest thing in the world to sit there and watch Jimi Hendrix. And I mean, like, to the point to where it's those kind of dreams where they're so in focus, where they're so in your face. They're almost night terror level kind of realities. And, you know, there wasn't much more to the dream. In fact, if anything, it was one of those points where you sit there and you're involved in the dream and you realize you're dreaming. Well, nonetheless, after a little while, I know there was another few bits in there. It was a fairly boring dream, but a very surreal one, where I woke up and I wrote that down. And the big reason, as I said, the big reason is I write these things down, like I said, to add them to stories or maybe come up with concepts and ideas and that sort of thing. But one of the things I begin to wonder, especially about dreams and, you know, and nightmares as well, too, is, are these the sort of things that end up influencing us in more ways than, you know, just coming up with really cool ideas for stories or movies or, you know, play, or, you know, plays or whatever you might be into, or even songs or anything like, I mean, those, you know, it's a given that any sort of creative person in life, I don't care if you're, you know, doing ceramics or you're, you know, illustrating or writing a song, you're drawing influence from all sorts of things. Dreams have always made me wonder, though, if we aren't flying off the driven, you know, or the chosen path that we're on. Case in point, I'm an illustrator. I very much like pop culture. I love the ability to be able to create among characters and stories and that sort of thing. But I wonder if sometimes on a subconscious level, if we're not driven by the imagery and the mental plays that happen in dreams for us, if they don't end up taking us down a totally different path, and why is that? So, yeah, this seems like kind of a weird podcast, you know, theme to cover and everything, but I believe that people do end up pulling a lot of influence from that. I mean, I certainly do myself. So, I mean, I'm interested to know what you guys do. If you want, leave a comment, you know, in the comment section, email me, that sort of thing. Let me know what you think about dreams. They're kind of bizarre. They're kind of weird, aren't they? And sometimes, you know, they can be really downright horrific. I'll leave you with one last one that I had not that long ago. Now, in Hispanic culture, there is a character called La Llorona. Now, what that is essentially a woman. There's variations on this. You can Wikipedia it. It's actually fairly fascinating. What it is, it's a woman, I believe, who had lived in northern Mexico is one variation of the story. And at one point in time, she had actually drowned her two children. Now, I don't remember if it was out of poverty, hunger, jealousy. I don't remember that part of the story, just because there's so many versions of it. But the point of it is that kind of story, you know, is fairly horrific. But I had a dream where I, you know, was a young child. And for some reason, I ended up back, and it seemed like it was the 1920s, maybe 1910 or so. But I was in a home that I was not familiar with because I'd never been there, although it had a sense of familiarity. And everything in that particular dream had a very muted tone. Now, in this dream, it's dark. It's at night. And I can see what I believe is my great-great-grandfather and some other relatives that I didn't even wake up fast enough to really write down who was in there. I remember a few names like Ignacio and some other people like that. These are callbacks to some of the people that had lived quite a while back in my family. Well, nonetheless, in my dream, it was like I was a child in this home. Now, they were talking to me. They were telling me, you know, you got to go to bed because La Llorona will be around, and don't answer the door no matter what you do. And in this dream, at some point in time, finally all the lights were turned off, you know, or the candles were turned off and that sort of thing. Everyone went to sleep. But I remember that in that dream, I was sleeping on a bed that was like in the main living area. The house was not that big, but it had the giant farm windows. And if you looked out, which I could look out through that window as I was sleeping, and I was in that dream, I believe I was like 5 or 6 years old, and I'm looking out across this moonlit pastured area. And the first thing I hear is, you know, some owls and that sort of thing. But then I hear the most cavernous, just wail of a woman just pierce the night. And it's that kind of fear, that kind of dread that grips you inside when you're a child and you're not quite sure if anyone's going to be able to help you. And that sounds bizarre, but maybe some of you have felt that, you know, even in your own bedrooms at night or that sort of thing. And then in my dream, I'm looking out across that pasture, and there's what looks like a fairly worn down barn in the distance, and a woman in pure white almost seems to be gliding across the field toward the house. And I remember in my dream, I broke out in sweat. I started crying, and I thought to myself, she's coming for me. Because in the original tales, La Llorona is actually looking for other children. She's crying out for her children, but she'll steal your children away too. And in my dream, I couldn't cry out. My throat automatically went dry. I was shivering, but I was sweating at the same time. And I kept covering myself up, even though it was a hot, hot evening. It just, all of those sort of things started coming up on me. You know, just this gritty reality of the dream. And in my head, I was thinking to myself, this can't be real. But everything from the smell of the old wood in the house to my own sweat to the way the fabric was wet and cold at the same time on that hot summer night, and the woman's figure is just slowly coming up across the pasture up to the front door. Now, she ends up coming up to the front door, and there's a knock, three knocks actually. And she cries out this horrible, horrible, almost banshee-like wail. And she's crying out for her children. At that point in time, that was when my dream ended. I screamed for my great-grandfather. And I sat bolt up in bed. Tried to keep everything together. I mean, I wouldn't classify that one as a nightmare. I mean, I guess some people would. I didn't, though. What it did do was it made me go and talked to my parents about a week later, kind of told them the story and that sort of thing. And it was nothing more than maybe an anecdotal sort of thing to exchange with them. But what it did do was it ended up bringing up who these people were that maybe I hadn't taken the time to learn about. Old family members, old places, where they had lived, what the story of La Llorona was actually about and what it meant. So I was really kind of, you know, impressed with the fact that this bit of mental imagery, what we call a dream, was something that drove me to go and do, you know, do more research and actually talk to my parents and spend more time with them. And if that had never happened, would I have, of my own accord, gone and spent even more time with my parents or talked to them about my ancestors, you know, people that I had never met? I've only known from maybe a few old faded photos that we cherish and we keep hidden from the sunlight so they won't fade. Anyway, I leave you with that. Hopefully it wasn't too weird or too creepy or anything else like that. I am trying some new different sort of themes and concepts for everyone, you know, for all you listeners and everything. I can't thank you guys enough. And also, please check me out. If you want to support me, go to my store envy site, go to theartisanrogue.com. I've also got a Patreon website set up. I'm just continually editing and reworking that thing. And I'm also back out on the road now with shows and stuff. I ended up doing StealthCon, and I will leave you guys with this part. StealthCon was awesome. It was actually kind of like a homecoming for me. And there was a great article that was in the online for UCM, not CMSU, where I got interviewed. That was a lot of fun. The biggest part about it that really made me happy, though, was that personally it was like coming full circle. I had finished high school there. I had gone to college there. And although I didn't really have much of a chance to say this, I believe, in my last post, it really meant something to me. I had a wonderful art instructor. He's a good, great man, Mr. John Willard. He was my instructor in high school. And he really kind of drove me in the right direction. He made me understand what it meant to be an artist, but more importantly, what to be, you know, how to be a good man as well as being a good artist. And then, in kind of a weird circle, my first day of college, I had figure class, and I was actually taught by the man that taught Mr. Willard, Mr. George Sample, who's, you know, still around and still writing a book on perspective, I believe. I'm hoping he's going to release that soon. And, so it was interesting to see that sort of thing play out. And then I certainly had a lot of other wonderful, in fact, every single instructor I had at CMSU was fantastic. From, you know, just great people, and I try to keep in touch with all of them. One of the ones I was very close to was Mr. John Lynch, and although he was quite a polarizing character at CMSU, he was definitely one that got me. And I do recall one time he told me that I had reminded him a lot of a friend of his who passed away in Vietnam. And I remember that, you know, a lot of times when I was in his illustration class, he consistently challenged me to try new things, do new things, and that maybe, you know, with a lot of luck and a lot of hard work and perseverance, I would make something of myself. Because the truth is that the illustration field is extremely hard to get into. But even back then, I remember having dreams about struggling, about showing up to class without projects finished, or dreading the fact that I would not be able to afford my art supplies or that sort of thing. And in a weird sort of thing, I ended up, and this should be starting up, I believe, in April. There's a small group that was formed out of where I work currently, Hallmark. They're called Scribblers Co. And it's a little collaboration of people that are coming together to teach other kids in the inner city, Kansas City area, about artwork and writing. And I got the distinction of being the guy that's going to hopefully be able to pass along the lessons that I learned from some very passionate, very intelligent people, men and women, that really influenced who I was. And probably even influenced a lot of the dreams and nightmares that I had throughout college and later in life. So, a good part of this podcast is also saying thank you to all of you guys out there that taught me along the way and helped me out. And for the rest of you, keep on listening to your dreams. And don't be so scared of your nightmares. There's probably something you can learn from every single one of them. Thanks again for listening. I'm Mario the Artisan Rogue. Until next time, support your local artists, be kind to your fellow beings, and I'll see you next time.